Welcome to Occult the Personality Podcast. Joining us once again is our good friend Christopher Moores of creativecosmos.org. Christopher, thanks again for joining us. Really appreciate it.
Yeah, my pleasure. Nowhere else I'd rather be right now. I love coming on the air and chatting with you, and very glad to be here.
Excellent. The feeling is definitely mutual. It's been a little while since our last conversation, and sounds like things are going pretty well, which is good. Today, I had a few things, ideas to sort of open up the conversation.
Sure.
And I wanted to start basically with, your suggestion about this idea of sort of bringing the soul into the body. It seems like a really crucial way to start things off when people are sort of getting into these ideas and practices, because that whole concept about making your body a temple and sort of purification and these type of things definitely seems like there's something to that.
Well, yeah, you know, it was kind of something I felt my way through. You know, I had some help with the initial awakening process, but as far as like what was happening, you know, particularly if you're an older soul who's got a lot of experience, when you finally crack the egg of this specific incarnation and that stuff starts coming in, well, that's a lot to assimilate, you know. And it begins by starting to see yourself outside of the context of life in this body in this short time since you were born the last time to now, you know, whether it be 20 years, 40 years, 60 years. It's still just one short period of time. You know, you're born in a specific area, you have like family and cultural influences, and you know, things draw you out and your attention out, and you start seeing yourself according to the feedback you get from others, and you start defining yourself and crystallizing this separate identity that you identify with. Well, in order to get back to the longer soul journey, the greater continuum of who we are, we have to start unraveling that alternate focal point and then allowing for the greater perspective.
Mm. Yeah, what are some of the ways that you find are really effective in sort of engaging that?
Well, the most effective one for me has been to observe. To kind of be like the blank mirror, you know, you see things that come up in your mind. Like first, when you recognize that your mind has these cultivated habits due to this particular circumstance, you have to observe them as they come up and then not allow them to possess you and move you through the action which that particular impulse would entail. You know, that's one of the reasons for the concept of non-doing. Well, once you realize your awakening has begun, you want to start giving yourself space and time before you take, you know, or you don't want to act on every impulse, because that's really how we stir up karma and external activity that then takes all our time and energy. So in a sense, we're kind of withdrawing from that and bringing the energy back to ourselves, you know, focus on watching these things come up and then letting them go by and just observe them, observe what they might have you do, you know, like when I was first doing that, I was like, holy crap, I've been all stirring up all kinds of trouble. I'm going to stop. And so then when I felt these compulsions, and sometimes it's hard because it kicks in the emotion and you really feel like it's justified. You know, that's why you just have to, it's a blank observation. That's the consciousness, cultivating consciousness outside of the mind and emotional state. It's just that awareness, presence itself. And so as often as you can, restore cognizance of awareness, the observing consciousness.
Hmm. Definitely. Yeah, I agree. Being able to sort of observe and not act on impulse, and just sort of let it pass by and notice it is really, really important. Easier said than done sometimes. Mm-hmm. As you So you, once you sort of begin that process, it seems like, you know, and you kind of mentioned this, where you're not trying to sort of hold on to beliefs or grasp for conclusions. You're sort of attempting to try and sort of ascend beyond truth to a state of reality. Is that accurate?
Well, yeah, that's one interesting way to put it. I'd say, it's kind of like, yeah, I mean, there's a greater reality that's already there. We're just often too occupied with the externals to give time and space for it, you know. And that includes if you're always thinking, if your mind's always like, okay, what am I going to do? I got to organize this, and what's going to happen tomorrow? And, oh, man, I can't believe so-and-so said whatever they said to me and blah, 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 and blah, blah, blah. You know, you got to be able to quiet the mind at command. And eventually that you get better and better at doing that, the more you learn that train of thought is not who you are. And further on the deconstruction of the mind, we start with where we are. The road to the source lies back through the path we took to get where we are. So let's say you're in a certain kind of a job or whatever. Well, maybe look at all the circumstances that led you to that job. You know, some people might be exactly where their heart is fulfilled, but maybe somebody else might have had a series of circumstances, you know, like when they were a kid, they just ended up being around a certain kind of a crowd, like maybe a business crowd. And so then they ended up going into business because that's what they were around their whole life. But maybe in their heart, they want to be a painter or a sailor or whatever, you know. So we begin by kind of re-examining our nature over again. You know, that's really kind of the idea of being reborn or rebirth, is you clean your own slate, so to speak, and begin the exploration again with the eyes of wonder and decide for yourself how you feel about everything. You know, all these beliefs or definitions we have of ourselves, we have to just see where they came from. You know, if it came from an external source, just kind of trace it back, see where it came from, take note, and let it rest. And now, henceforth, make your decisions based on the new condition. But then as we go through, as we're observing the mind, and each of these things come up, and we no longer believe them to be ourselves, and we see where they came from, let them pass through one more time, and they become settled. But then as we do this again and again and again, now we're starting to make space, like you said, cleaning the temple. Because we don't need to hold a fixed point to be aware and be conscious in the now. We just simply need to be here. That's enough. You don't need to have that rigid conception with which to meet the world. And over time you get better and better with going, rolling with that and maintaining continuity with yourself. See, that's kind of the beginning of that soul coming into the body. You make room by clearing out everybody else's influence, and then now you have to start discovering who you are and assimilating the greater story of your journey.
Very well put. So, assuming one has sort of begun that work and has gotten to the point where they've made that space, they can calm their mind, and the sort of hamster wheel of thought that's normally running in there. Then you start to encounter some things which can be very interesting, sometimes unexpected, but hopefully not. And those are what are referred to as psychic abilities. Could you speak a little bit about sort of the relationship between, you know, how this happens and the phenomenon itself?
Sure. Yeah, even as you're saying that, I'm kind of getting a little vision here. So now you get better and better at observing the mind and observing these things that pass through it. Well, then when your mind becomes loosened up to that point and is simply kind of a middle ground, like something you can use to serve your own ends as opposed to serving the mind matrix itself, you know, kind of getting outside of the mind, well, then now you in that space, in that freedom from that, that's where you begin to acquire other senses. You see, that mind is tied in with the five senses looking outward to the world. And that is basically a reductive process. You know, we look through the windows of the senses, which only have a certain spectrum range. So with each sense, we see but a sliver, and then that sliver is combined to form a singular imprint in the mind, and that's the feedback that we get from the external world through those senses. Okay, so now you put that whole thing in a ball, kind of move it to the side, and from that state of awareness and space, now you have, and then you come into yourself, come to rest in the present. Now you're more able to pick up other sensations because you're no longer occupied looking out. So, and one of the keys to this whole thing is to not doubt yourself and not to think it's outlandish or particularly surprising to get these phenomena because they're there. So we, you know, probably many people are already psychic, but they might short circuit it right away. So we have to learn to trust ourselves. Like you're walking down the street and your goal is, you know, a mile down the road straight, but for some reason you feel like hanging a left. Mm-hmm. Hang a left. You never know. There might be something ahead. There might be danger ahead. And your mind might say, no, just go forward. That's the straightest way. But maybe, you know, there's an accident waiting to happen or, you know, like I said, danger there. So if you just learn to trust your inclination, things will work out in probably better ways than you might have envisioned in the first place. So we definitely, the first key is to learn to trust those experiences and to not short circuit them right off the bat, because you have intuition, you know, that what I was just talking about is intuition, or even like right now when I'm talking to you, I'm trusting intuition. I didn't lay out well, I guess I did send you a little outline, but I didn't preconceive all this ahead of time what I'm saying right now. I'm letting it fly as it occurs to me, as I let the energy surge through me, take the form that it wants to take, and answer the question the best I can. You know, and even that outline I sense you kind of came from, because I'm kind of tuning into the audience or tuning into the experience, and then it dawns on me what I'd like to talk about, which is a very interactive process, by the way, because I'm, like I said, I'm tuning into the audience ahead of time, my goal is to meet the audience with something that hopefully will help awaken some experiences in them. So you kind of throw it in there and let it come back out. And then, like I said, you don't hold back or you don't second guess it or doubt it. You let it fly. And the more you do that, the more you become accustomed to the experience and you can facilitate it further.
Yeah, definitely. So it sounds a lot like, as they say, separating the subtle from the gross. Really tuning into those higher frequencies, if you will, of mental or psychic activity that we find are present if we can just become attuned to them by stilling everything else.
Mm-hmm.
So you talked about intuition. Mental telepathy is another sort of faculty that manifests quite a bit between people.
Yeah.
Often between people who are related or share some kind of common bond.
Well, you know, when you're speaking is in words with somebody, that's kind of first when you speak the words, first you're open, then you get the impulse, which then comes down and crystallizes in the form of an idea, which then gets spoken out. Well, if you are in harmonic resonance with somebody and you're just resting there and just even crystallizing the idea in your mind is enough for the other person to pick that idea up. Because, like I said, before we speak, it becomes clear in the mind. And then that, when you're resonating with someone, there's the separation between you isn't so significant. And that mental pathway, those mental pathways which used to serve external purposes, can now serve as gateways for that flow. So the more you're allowing that mental process to be open, it does kind of raise into a higher and freer form that then can be picked up like that. You know, and I think in the astral realm, that is often how we would communicate. We just would send thought forms rather than have to go through the whole process of speaking them. You know, sometimes you can look at somebody in the eyes and just know what they're thinking. Now, also on this kind of telepathy thing, it kind of leads you into the whole idea of, you know, what they call channeling or getting into contact with entities that are on the astral realm, because it's the same way it crystallizes in your mind. You know, when you get used to the mind, when you know you're not the mind and that the mind is just porthole or middle ground of where you send and receive messages, sometimes you'll get in that space a crystallized notion, and even as you traced back what you used to believe was yourself that came from external inputs, and you say, oh, that came from my parents, or that came from school, or that came from here, and that came from there. Well, the same manner also, you can get the feel of these messages, or that which is crystallized in your mind, and trace it back. And that's how you start getting the knack of the fact that it's a being or somebody there that's actually trying to contact you. And the more you are open to that, the more it's going to happen. You know, like myself, I never really turn it off. I live this way all the time. This is what I was going to mention when we were talking a little earlier. It's, you have simultaneous awareness of the physical world and the astral world and your heart and the, you know, all the input that's coming on. That's this one thing that witnessing consciousness, that observation, that blank mirror allows, because then you can just see a whole array rather than just seeing through those slices focused on one small thing. Now you can see everything that passes through you. And really that is, you can reflect the whole universe, everything in it, all the frequencies. And at any point, you can see or bring your attention to any one of those things. And the process of matching vibration happens automatically. So really that telepathy is synchronizing vibration with either somebody here or somebody there. You know, anybody, anything. You could synchronize vibrations with the earth. You can synchronize vibrations with animals, with the sun, with anything you can imagine. All the gods or goddesses or people that you've known from the other side. Sometimes, for instance, the most obvious or easy to catch telepathy will be you'll suddenly start remembering someone. Say someone you loved has died or crossed over, and now suddenly one day you're you're remembering them very strongly. It's not just a reflection of the past, but you're recalling these specific incidences, and then you start almost also having emotional reaction, and you start feeling very much like, well, that person is around, and that's because they are, and that's the means they have to communicate with you, is to access your mental lexicon and stimulate your emotions with their astral body.
So true, yeah. And I think a lot, you know, most people have had that experience at some point along the way. Now, along with these things, could you talk a little bit about visions?
Oh, sure. Yeah. that was a, you know, that you could say that goes under the clairvoyance, or, you know, maybe also it's related to the third eye. You know, sometimes you said earlier when you go under this process, sometimes you get things that you don't expect. Well, you know, that itself is a good sign that something is happening, you know, that you didn't preconceive it. Now suddenly, you know, wham, something has revealed itself to you. You have a realization, or another name for that is a satori, you know, where you crack through and it's like you were in a closed room and you open the door and suddenly the sun is outside. You see this, maybe this grand landscape that supersedes any notions that you've had before. Or, you know, it could be about a specific thing. You know, I do what I call our cosmic cartoons. You know, I have these drawings, and most of those drawings came from the visions that I had. You know, maybe about a specific spiritual process, or, you know, a realization or understanding that I came to through that process of opening up and letting go and letting that flow come through me and almost instruct me from the inside out. Because when you make room for that spirit to come into you and come through you, well, first of all, through the soul, when you make room for that and it comes in, you begin to reassimilate all the knowledge that soul has carried with it. So you get your last life's knowledge, and then the life before that, and then, you know, you soak up all of it. So that's also another reason to keep your self-identity loose and use that mirroring technique, because you've got to soak up lifetimes of experience to catch back up with yourself and reclaim the soul journey and learn those greater lessons and take the steps forward in our progress. And now that soul in that higher self is also connected to the spirit, which will flow through us and bring us to the next point in our understanding. So that's why, for my way in the creative cosmos, is you express yourself, you know, as these things come through you. You know, you draw a picture or make some music or write something about it, or, you know, however one feels inclined, but you allow it to move you and move through you, and then that makes room for the next one and the next one and the next one. And it's like flowers blooming in your heart.
Yeah, definitely. Now, how would you sort of How would you interpret dreams in this realm? Because sometimes it seems like that can be kind of a little bit harder to figure out, because, you know, we have dreams before this process begins, and sometimes it seems like, you know, the dream may be significant and sometimes maybe not. Is there any sort of general guidance with that, or you just kind of have to go with what feels right?
Well, yeah, I've kind of thought about that a good bit. And basically the way I see it is this, like, generally the dream space is to me the astral realms. You know, for the most part, if you go to sleep and you have a dream, somehow it's reality. You know, I mean, if you consider that you sleep 8 hours during the night, well, how is that 8 hours any less valid of activity than another 8 hours, because your attention is there with it and you're actually experiencing it and changing through that which you encounter. So to me, that's another realm, just looking at it that way. And also, that's one thing that observing consciousness, you know, you start to have a little more seamless day and night. You know, when you're awake and when you're asleep, you're still observing either way. So even in the dream state, then you can have observing consciousness and continuity of awareness. That's why all through the day, you remember, bring yourself back. You know, we talked on previous shows about, even if you have a challenge in the outer world, that can be a reason to bring yourself back. Remember yourself, call yourself back again and again. And then when you're going to sleep, well, you still got that impulse of calling yourself back, and then you can be more and more conscious in the dream, and then you can kind of just live both waking and sleeping, so to speak, realities as one experience that is unbroken. I also think sometimes, particularly if people haven't gone deep within their subconscious, then they won't have the freedom to experience like a lucid dream of where they're there and flying around and in the present, you know, because they will have too much in the way. They haven't freed themselves to the point to accept that possibility, because they're just focused on the world and what's in the world and believe themselves to be that. That is the biggest obstacle. What we believe ourselves to be and the limits we put on ourselves in reality with definitions that we falsely assume to be true. That's what the trick is. It seems to make so much sense when you look outside that the physical world is the point of focus. You know, you can prove to your mind over and over again that you should be looking outwards, but trying to, you know, And I'm not saying be against the outer at all. I'm just explaining the phenomenon of how you pull. If we're just only focused on the outer, we don't have room for this inner, you know. And if the outer is your only reality, outer being the world of, you know, superimposed on nature by humanity, so to speak, and how complicated and complex it is now. Well, we turn that around, and then our dreams are going to reflect those concerns of the mind. So even as we were talking about before, trying to be outside of the mind, well, if you're outside of the mind, then you're more likely to have the lucid dreaming experience. Well, if you're contained by the mind and identified with it and define yourself according to it, well, your dreams will probably be take the form of subconscious trying to express something to you to get you to start taking a little more notice, you know. So I think the dreams could be, but even in that case, it's still happening in an astral place. You know, all mental activity is derived from the astral realm, at least how I see it, kind of my working notion of it from what I've gathered in my own research and experience and all the things I've assimilated along the way. It just kind of makes sense to me that, you know, they aren't different. The astral, so like, you know, we'll be there in that dream state soon enough, you know, and maybe even that is what we're more familiar with than this place.
Mm. Yeah, that could be true. How do sort of the animals that we encounter fit into all of this, whether it be in the astral or the physical?
Well, I think there's a lot we can learn from the animals, and it's a great tragedy that humanity has lost contact with the animal nature, and just because each animal is the embodiment of an aspect of life and has lessons that we can accrue from tuning into that. And many animals are much more conscious than we give them credit for often, and could even send us those distinct messages. Like I believe that I communicate with my cat telepathically. He's not just, I don't see him as just an animal. He's very sharp in a way, and I can, he forms clear thought form. But the thing is, you can't expect that cat to speak English. You know? He's not going to reference, you know, Webster's dictionary and, you know, go to elementary school or something like that. He's already got his own language, and it's up to us. Kind of humanity, I believe, is like that middle point. That's one of our sweet aspects, is we can adapt, we can adjust, you know, we're flexible, we can tune into this and that, like I said earlier. So we phase into the cat, or we phase in, you know, to any animal. We meet them, and it's kind of a relaxed process. It's something you can get the knack for, but you have to be outside of yourself. You know, the thing with that specific definition or the ideas people carry about themselves, well, then it causes them to be locked in on a certain vibratory rate. You know, that's why somebody who's kind of looser can read other people that have that firm notion of themselves, because they're resonating one frequency right out in the open. It's just obvious. You can see it on their face. You can see it on in their body language. You can see how they're carrying themselves. And you kind of, having kind of worked through that, you kind of recognize, oh, they're, you know, they're carrying some anxiety or stress or something's wrong, or, you know, that's one trick. If you're empathic, like myself, this is something I realized bringing my own soul into the body, that I can really feel these other people. And now, when I was young, I had that latent ability, but I had no idea what it was. And I wasn't able to sort it out, so I'd pick up everybody's feelings around me, and it would confuse me. You know, it caused me some significant consternation, because I wasn't able to trace it back to the source and realize that, well, that just happens to be part of my nature, that I can soak this energy up, you know.
Yeah, that could make being in a crowd very difficult.
Yeah, even today I kind of lay low from crowds. Or if I go out, you know, like say to a ball game or something, I like to do that, I can do that, but I eventually retreat. You know, kind of back to my own space and build my energy. So, yeah, it's definitely a trick if you've got that. You feel the other people so much that it'll drive you nuts after a while.
You kind of talked a little bit about picking up the soul journey earlier, but...
It's kind of, you gotta catch up with yourself first, you know. Like I said, you soak it all up and come to know all this about yourself. And then your soul journey is walking forward, you know. How you take all that experience and all that awareness and bring it into the present. And then rather than dealing with successive events from preconception, you take that sum total of knowledge and bring it to bear with each thing that occurs henceforth. You know, I mean, one thing I do is always give myself a little space to adjust. You know, I kind of train myself to not react instantly, but to give it a little buffer zone. And then at some point, you bring that knowledge to bear and move through it. So it's a different way of operating. It's not a set of rules or preconceptions or something that is a plan that you then impose on everything else, but you take that, all the things you've been exposed to, and allow it to be part of the next move forward. Because one of the biggest things is that we don't know what's coming next. So we can set up a plan, specific plan for tomorrow, but we don't know what tomorrow is going to bring, so the plan is bound to be insufficient.
Right.
We could use it as a general guideline if we want. It's up to us. It's our decision whether we want to, you know, try to move in this direction or not. But we have to allow for that flexibility, you know, and bringing that cognizance of your soul into the body. And you know, it gives me a sense of, just that it's like my mission, I guess you could say, or my responsibility to then exude the spiritual principles in the manner I carry myself forth. And I am still learning lessons myself. You know, some of the greater lessons in your journey might be such thing as, humility or, the capacity to open your heart and share. You know, sometimes we can look back over our life's trials and some of the difficult things we've been through, and when we're no longer so personally involved with it and we consider it from a soul perspective, now why would I have been subject to that? And then you can see, well, it kind of elicited that response of being more aware of other people. So, you know, maybe we go through these trials, but they're, if we look at them from the other hand, rather than resisting the trials and wishing they didn't happen, but gleaning the lesson, the soul lesson that that experience revealed to us, then we are indeed moving forward on that soul path, you know, because we're going to draw to us whatever we need to progress. You know, that's the Zen saying, when the student is ready, the master will come. It may come in the form of some old guy with a beard, but maybe not, probably not. We don't need it to come that way. It will come as the next experience we have. So you start seeing that each moment is the master or the teacher. The circumstance itself is trying to reveal that lesson to you. And that's exactly what this physical world reality and the dream world reality have exactly in common. That the circumstance you're exposed to is designed to elicit a response in you that is then going to reveal a lesson.
Yeah. So life is a school in a sense.
Yeah, I think it is. I think it is to some, you know, to some extent. Expansion comes from growing. I mean, we can observe nature, and what do we see? We see growth and, you know, movement. We see the tree grow up. You know, we see animals grow up. Everything in nature moves and changes and adapts, and it's a lot easier for us in our journey if we also allow for change and adapt.
So what do you see as some of the sort of pitfalls along the spiritual path for people who, you know, are trying to evolve and who may get sidetracked or waylaid?
Well, I mean, that doubt, self-doubt, you know, especially if your old definition of yourself was very specific and a part of a extensive network. When you start unplugging yourself from that, you'll probably get a good amount of resistance, you know, because other people have a interest in you maybe remaining that way. you know, that's one thing a lot of relationships kind of get into certain patterns or habits and kind of stagnate there a little bit. You know, so in anything new or change or, you know, just like say myself, you know, I got a beard or whatever. Most of the time I wear a beard. Well, every once in a while I'll shave it off and then I'll go out in public and everyone will be like, oh my God, geez, what are you doing, man? You look crazy. And that's just kind of an example. Change, you know, people react to change. It freaks them out. Or, you know, I just was recently talking to someone, a friend of mine, who kind of tried, I guess you could almost say it was, what do they call those, makeover. I guess she kind of changed the way she was appearing herself. And then when she showed up around friends, you know, they kind of gave her a hard time and it kind of hurt her feelings a little bit, but you know, she's strong and going to carry it forward. So you have to trust yourself, because your unique experience is going to be different than anybody else's. So you don't want to seek validation from the outside for that which you're feeling inside. So I guess that is one of the key potential pitfalls. You know, if you seek validation for your unique inner experience, you aren't going to find it because that's yours. So you have to learn to trust that. That's kind of nurturing your own budding seed. You know, you got to stand by yourself and support that and move forward with it. Like I said, you know, I use a method of creating music or creating artwork or writing or somehow express that and share that, you know. The other thing is, you know, just if you feel when you unplug from that old reality, you might not yet necessarily know the way forward. You know, the old has gone, but the new has not yet come. Mm-hmm. And you're kind of caught in this middle ground with nothing compelling you forward, really. And it's important that you might even call that, sometimes they call that dark night of the soul. You're in this kind of zero point, this empty ground where you're just kind of there and you don't know what the new is going to bring. You're not relying on your old crutches, but you're moving brand new into a completely unknown future. And that can be scary. You know, that's why the Sangha and the three gems, a little support can help, you know. And if somebody doesn't have support in their immediate community, well, that's one reason you and I can do a show like this and offer a little support that, yeah, these things are real and there are many things to experience. And, you know, as I talk about these things, I'm not giving conclusions. I'm kind of sweeping over it and throwing out as much as I can about it, just to give provocations or reinforcements or ideas or examples of what the process did for me and to me and through me. And you know, then that alone can be helpful when somebody else is experiencing strange phenomenon. You know, not to lose heart. You know, to take heart, others have also embarked upon this journey, and there are many rewards to be had.
Oh, indeed. And you talked about support, the Sangha, but could you talk a little bit also about the support from, you know, maybe the inner planes or astral planes or other entities that are there to sort of draw from as well?
Sure. You know, I look at it this way. Just like we have family and friends here, there's just as many family and friends there. Mm-hmm. You know, we have a group over there that once we return there, we'll remember them and they will be intimate and, you know, they're around us. They're able to, like say for instance, they could plant an idea in someone's head that could be favorable to you having, you know, something working out. You know, entities around the astral plane could help you bring you together with, say, a new friend or a new romantic partner, or just generally send you love. You know, even as you can send love to someone that has crossed over from your side. So really it's that love that seamlessly transitions from the physical world to the astral plane. And we gotta remember that that is not far away. You know, the realms of vibration go on and on and on, but that basic astral realm is just out of sight. And like I said, you want cognizance of being in all these places at once, you know, the 3D realms, and then through our intuition and psychic vision, as we talked about earlier, and just sense of self as soul, we also are in the astral realm, and through those other senses can interact with beings over there. So we're here and there. We have our friends and family here and our friends and family there. And also not just our immediate circle, but let's say you have certain authors or artists or people of history that inspire you, so to speak. Well, you can draw strength from them astrally as well, because time is in the physical world, it doesn't work the same as it does in the astral world. Even as you see, you can dream, you could dream a whole lifetime in one night, you know, or at least a very long time, but it would just be a few hours here. You know, you can contact, you know, various, you know, like spiritual inspiration, or like I said, artistic inspiration. Like, you know, I draw, especially early in my work, I drew from Beethoven, for instance. And I just didn't feel like I was just reading about him in a book and kind of putting those lessons to play. No, I feel like I tuned into the energy, the spirit of Beethoven, and it really gave me strength and inspiration in the present, you know. Or some of the spiritual figures I've talked about before on these shows, like Yogananda or Osho, or, you know, artists or authors, or, you know, just you name it. Book, you, when you read a book, this person might be gone, but sometimes you feel like you're really connecting with them, you're really syncing with them, and it really is so. So that's another way you can draw strength and support from people on the astral plane, because who knows who it's going to be that's going to understand what you're going through, at least as best they can. You know, in the end, we're all, like I said, having a unique experience, and essentially, in that sense, that's our own phenomenon to have. But to find that support or that friendship or that understanding that we need to continue to expand on that, we can find that from many different sources.
Indeed, yeah, that's for sure. I want to give you an opportunity to sort of speak, you know, whatever's on your mind, to, if you had any thoughts for people listening, or those who've, you know, listened to the show. And I know we've gotten a lot of positive feedback from the previous ones we've done in the past, so I'm sure that there are many people who are sort of anxiously awaiting this one.
Yeah, well, that's great. That's great to hear, and, you know, I've heard from some people too, and yeah, I'm always thrilled when that happens, or somebody says they got something from the show. And I've said before, that nourishes me and continues to give me energy to carry on in my work. You know, my life is not without its own challenges. You know, I have to deal with the outside world and deal with the reality of being here, and all kinds of things as well. You know, so it gives me inspiration and strength that this is important to somebody. And this is part of my support and feedback. You know, when you write me and you say you enjoyed it or got something from it, then that, you know, is, like I said, my support, gives me strength to carry on. And, you know, I consider these matters all the time, and I'm always trying to evolve my concept and bring clearer and clearer information to bear and to share. You know, I try to be as balanced and centered and neutral, so to speak, about it, you know, but still have my own take and allow my own intuition and expression to go where feels it needs to. You know, we're all human beings. We don't know exactly what's happening here. We just find ourselves on this blue sphere in outer space, our heads in the clouds. The clock's a ticking. We're supposed to do something before the end. You know, we wouldn't really be here. You know, I encourage people to find as much enjoyment and peace as they can, make lots of friends, and to not put off doing the things that you dream to do. You know, go for it, share, reach out. You know, if you have somebody near you that you care about, that you love, tell them that. You know, don't hold back. We don't know what's going to happen. You know, one of us might not be here tomorrow. So that's my most important message, is to say thank you. Thank you, Greg, and thank you, everybody, for sharing the experience with me in this lifetime and this ability to love and grow.
Well, thank you, Chris. It's been a pleasure speaking with you again. I always enjoy it and always feel I've learned a great deal. Once again, your website is creativecosmos.org, and you're the author of the Pearly Gates Press, which I'll put a link to as well on the site.
Yeah, I have a new one just about ready, too. It's called Ruminations of the Universe. So those of you listening to this podcast and checking it out, hopefully very soon. I'm just a few page numbers away from having it done and going through the Cafe Press process. So maybe a week or two, the next book will be up there, too, Ruminations of the Universe. So keep an eye out for that as well.
Oh, excellent. All right. Well, Chris, I want to thank you once again, and I look forward to speaking with you in the future.
Yeah, anytime. I'm always available, and it's great to have this time with you. And like I always say, love your site, Cult of Personality. Check it out. I tell everyone I know to check it out. And you're doing great work, and thank you for that, too.
Oh, I appreciate that very much.
Are we born once? Are we born twice? Is it my imagination? Are we born once? Are we born twice? Is it my imagination? Is it a big surprise? Behind it all. that's in me, it set me free.